My name is Roland. Today I want to talk about trauma and about violation. A lot of people have post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD. You could also call it stress disorder. And I say that far more people have PTSD than realize that they have it, but they haven't formally called it that. In fact, I would say just about the whole human race, with very few exceptions, or the whole human race without exception. The whole human race without exception has post-traumatic stress disorder. For example, we all suffer inherently. See, we're born as little egos in a fallen world, subject to wrong authorities, see? And we have grow to full stature, and then we discover that we know very little about life and how to find our way, and other people claim to know, and they often mislead us. And as you can see, it's quite a process, searching for God, searching for salvation, searching for something that is lost. Milton called it Paradise Lost. And the reason why life is tough, why people, our authorities are not so good, why our parents made so many mistakes, why we make mistakes, is because we're born with what we inherit from Adam and Eve. So we're all born subject to the legacy of the Garden of Eden. And what happened in the Garden of Eden was a fall, a trauma, a violation. The human race, before that, before the fall, Adam and Eve could have lived forever. They would have lived forever. See, in paradise, on an endless voyage of discovery, they would never have tasted death, they would never have tasted suffering, they would never have known suffering, they would never have experienced death. But something happened in the garden. What was it? What happened was that that Adam chose knowledge. He chose to eat of a tree that he was told not to. He was warned not to eat of that tree. Now, why the tree was there? See, the reason the tree was there, and this is another subject, a subject for another lecture. But you see, in order to create God, love, God had to give us a choice factor so that we could choose to love God or not love God. You see, to love God or love ourselves, or love God or love pride. See? And so without that choice factor, without freedom, there could not be love. So we had to have that tree of knowledge there, the knowledge of good and evil. But when Adam tasted of that knowledge, he changed. And Eve changed along with him. They both changed. They lost paradise, and then they had to adapt to the jungle hell to which they were fallen. Now, if you look at knowledge, in the Bible there's a term like to know someone means to be intimate with someone, to have, carnal relations with someone, the old-fashioned term to know. Well, you could say that Adam, when he knew knowledge, when he was intimate with knowledge, when he had a sensuous carnal relationship with knowledge, with words, with raw knowledge, then that ushered in all manner of knowings, all manner of carnal knowings. And so all of the pleasures and pains and the lusts and hates, see? You see, when we fall, here's another way of putting it. See, in your own life, when you think in your own life, you once upon a time you were happy and carefree, a little child, you were happy. And you loved to play with your dolls or with your little, or with your baseball cards, and you loved sports and you loved fairy tales, and you were sweet and you were innocent. But then something went wrong. Somewhere along the line, you tasted undoubtedly of hate. See, someone tempted you to hate them. A rotten parent, a pressuring parent, a not their parent, a cruel parent, a confusing parent, see? Or other kids, an older brother or sister that was cruel, or kids at school that were cruel and they teased you. You had pressure to hate, see? And often it begins at home. See, our parents, look at how confused you are and how many mistakes you have made, even though you don't want to. You don't want to, but you do, see? Well, your parents were the same. I know we want to put our parents on a pedestal. We want our parents to be noble, you know, like Moses or David, or like Ruth, you know, like Elijah, like George Washington. We want them to be these great and virtuous and very wise people. But they had feet of clay, and they were just as confused as you are now. And so they made mistakes. Undoubtedly, your unloved mom resented her husband, who wasn't there for her. He didn't have love for her. He worshipped her instead of God, and he was weak. He was violent or weak, and she hated him. See, and then she took it out on you. This is just typical. I'm just painting a typical scenario. If this doesn't apply to you, then don't worry about it. But at some point, you'll have to see how the different scenarios played out in your life and traumatized you. But you were traumatized by her hate, or you were traumatized by her love out of hate. See, when she lost a true love, a true respect and a true love for your father because he failed her, just as her father had failed her and all men failed her, see, then out of that hate came a different kind of love from her, a sensuous love, a needy love, a possessive love, see, you could almost call it a hateful kind of a love, a love that is not healthy. See, a love that is not healthy, and that love violated you as a little boy, as a little child, especially if you were a little boy. Her hatred of your father, her possessiveness of your love, and her kind of love, her kind of sensuous love, violent love. See, aroused lust. See, aroused hate. Arouse resentment and lust, hate and lust. See? And so we end up in life lusting that which we hate. But that was the initial trauma. You were violated by hate, her hatred of her father, her possessiveness of you, of your love, see? And her kind of substitute love, substitute for the kind of real love that she might have had her husband been a noble man that she could have respected. See how that works? So you were violated by false love, see, and also by confusion and cruelty. So you experienced hate, and then out of the hate came lust. See, so that was the beginning of your fall, and the rest of your life has revolved around false love. See, and hatred and resentment of those who give us false love, and lusting after their false love. We lust their false love to soothe the pain. See, and it's not just sexual love, although that's the primary one. That's the primary one, and the one that most of us have a problem with is the sexual love. But there are other kind of love. There's drug love, medication love, the bartender's love, the masseuse's love. See, the false love for being a people pleaser and going along to getting along and not rocking the boat, perks to so you don't rock the boat. All those are all false love. See, music, the music, entertainment industry love. You see what I mean? So that we love them, but then we hate them because they're degrading us. They violate us with their false love and their false assurances. See, and their consoling love. We hate it, then it violates us. We're violated by it and by the hate. And then we lust it. See? And then we lust it, and then when we get it, it violates us and we hate it. See how that works? So that becomes the story of our love, of our life. And women hate men, see? They hate men, but they crave, you know, they find themselves with a man who they hate, and then he violates them with his lack of love, lack of true love for them. Then they hate him. Then out of guilt, see, they serve him, and then he violates. See how that works? So you have that over and over again. In so many different varieties, you can look into your own life and see how it happened. Weak father and angry mother. Weak father, fierce mother. See, violent father, submissive mother who hates him. And the more she submits to him, the worse he gets. See, so she destroys him through her submission. See, and he with his crudity or cruelty or his not being there for her. See, and these things can play out in a very subtle way, even in a decent looking home on a nice street with a nice two-car garage and two cars and, you know, a nice job and everything nice. These subtle undercurrents of resentment and hate and lust and violence, and they're there. See, kids pick up on it. See, and so there's so much I could say about it, but we'll just say it's a violation. See, this violation. See how I went back to the Garden of Eden, and I showed how none of us are born perfect, or that we could live forever. None of us are born above all of it. You see what I mean? Some of us are more noble than others. Some are relatively unscathed if we had decent parents. And we're sort of decent ourselves, and we're not violated unduly. We grow up to be rather decent people, see, rather decent. But nevertheless, even if you had good parents and a good home, and you're a decent soul yourself, a decent noble soul, you know, a George Washington type, or you know, a Margaret Thatcher type, kind of strong and solid and good. Nevertheless, you still have this body that you're dragging around with you that is subject to decay and death. And you still have these emotions that rear their ugly head. And you're tempted on all sides, tempted to lust and to hate on all sides. See, it's everywhere. See, and all around you are wrong people who tempt you to judge them. See, wrong people who tempt you to resent them on the one hand, or tempt you to feel sorry for them and try to help them on the other. See, so you help them with your human love. See, Christ had a way of helping people for they got better. He had a way of helping people that they got better. They were cured and restored, and then they were okay. But in our fallen state, the only kind of love we know is the sensuous love, the consoling love, see, the false love. See, so we hate others when we see their errors, and then out of guilt we try to help them, and we offer false love that doesn't make them any better. See? All right. So now you see how we're born already subject to a world, because we have a fallen nature, we have an ego, and we have these emotions of love and hate that are easily aroused, lust and violence easily aroused by tease on the outside. And so we have this fallen nature, which came out of the trauma in the garden. It came out of the trauma of the violation of knowledge, of carnal knowledge, word knowledge, intellectual knowledge. See, which led to carnality, and to the arousal. See, and of animal lust, we became more animal. In simple terms, we became more animal. So when college students go away and study and study and all they do is sit around and study, they become more animal. Plus they become guilty. They become guilty for studying and not being themselves. Not that study is wrong, but ambitious study or the kind of environment that they're put into. See, nowadays on the campus is just wall-to-wall tees anyway. And so they sit around and study to try to lap up knowledge to make something of themselves. So they're recommitting, without realizing it, the sin in the Garden of Eden of wanting to be a god. See, instead of loving God, Adam wanted to be God. And knowledge, he thought, was the answer, which we still think knowledge is the answer. See? And so, it's a recreation in our own life, a reenactment, a recapitulation of the original fall. And no sooner do you know something, no sooner do you know knowledge than you become more lustful. See, more hungry, more sensuous, more sensual, more animal. See? So it arouses lust. Temptation arouses lust. See? Your unloved, naughty mother aroused lust. Even perhaps your father, your weak father, your angry father, your nothing father aroused lust or hate. See? So this fallen nature is born of trauma, subject to trauma, and there's plenty of people around who are confusing and tempting, and they confuse us and tempt us, see? So there you have, see, so we're born as creatures of trauma, and then we're subject to environments where we're sure to be traumatized by people's lack of love, see, by their lack of understanding, see? And so there you have it. So we're all creatures of trauma, born with fallen natures that were birthed in trauma in the Garden of Eden, and we all are of that lineage of trauma. Okay? All right. So now you see what we're up against. Now you see what you're up against, and now you see why something else is required. See? We cannot pull ourselves up by our own bootstraps. We cannot save ourselves. We can't make ourselves well. See? I mean, sure, we can live a better life rather than a worse life. We can clean up our act. We can eat properly instead of eating wrong food and so on and so forth. So we're better off than if we weren't living properly. But we can't save ourselves. We can't change our nature, just like a leopard can't change his spots. The fallen woman, the fallen, uncorrected woman has something of Eve in her, something of the serpent in her, something of guile in her, and the fallen man has weakness and a little bit of ambition. Ambition just as Adam was ambitious, that's what the nature we're born with. See, and then you put them the two together, and she brings out the worst in him, and he brings out the worst in her, you see? And their kind of love, see, so human love, you know, the love of Mammon, see, and all of our knowledge, our technology, see, as clever as it is, and our procedures and techniques and things as clever as they are, see, ultimately are of the earth. And there's not that something extra. It's the something beyond, see? So something beyond is needed. In other words, God needs to save us. We can't repent ourselves. We need his spiritual light, his presence of his light to repent us. We can't change ourselves. We need something of him. See, we have something of animal in us now. We're animal, and something of the devil in us, this pride that we have. And we need to have that exchanged, you know, or dissolved and replaced by something of God. Something of innocence again, sweet, that we might begin to grow in his image and likeness. Okay? All right. Now the other factor, so now you see how we're all subject to trauma and to violation. Now do you understand why people literally seek, you see them looking for violation. See, You see, people, you know the old joke, person walking around with a sign on his back that says, hit me? You know, it's a, you know, when I was in high school, one kid would make up a little sign and put scotch tape on it and then slap another kid on the back. And when he slapped him on the back, he left that little paper sign behind that said, hit me. You know what I mean? But people go around and we're looking, see, we're looking for someone, for example, to diss us or to disrespect us a little or to look at us funny, see, or to be reluctant to serve us or to not say good morning to us. See, we look for that because then when that happens, then we can puff our ego can puff up. And so we hate them a little, we resent them a little, and out of the resentment, see, then comes a little energy out of that resentment. Then we can use that energy to either hate them, or we can use that energy to have a little extra energy boost to work a little harder, or to compensate and try to prove something. See? Or we can use that little energy and the guilt for hating them to then serve them and be nice to them. So we resent them, and then we out of guilt, we serve them and they're nice to them, and we observe ourselves as being nice and doing things for other people, and it seems like we're wonderful, but it's all out of, see, it's all out of hate and out of judgment. And then when they fail us, when they don't get better, when all of our help didn't make them better, then we resent them again, see? See how that works? So people, see, they look for violation, not consciously, but the violation arouses them. See, their lust is aroused by violation. And that's why when kids are violated in some way, then later in life they go out and look for the same type of violation. And then eventually they become the violator themselves. See, so whether they were molested as kids, or whether they were violated by fire or by cruelty or by pressure, see, ambition pressure, then later they're doing the same thing. They grow up, they become the molester, or they become the pressure monger, they become the teaser, see? They go out and look for it and look for it and look for it, and then they grow until they graduate to become the one that provides the tease or the violation, see? See how that is? And then they hate the one that they're violating because they know that they are thereby becoming worse, just like bullies and wimps. See, the wimp, the bully hates the wimp because the wimp, see, brings out the bully, and then the bully is a bully and he hates himself. He sees how he's becoming worse because of the wimp, so he hates the wimp. See? And the wimp, see, blames the bully and hates the bully, but little does he know that he's inside growing in the image of the bully. See how that works? So violation is what happens. We become more animal, more beastly, more animal, and more devilish. Until you have people, some people, they grow up and through their beastly practices and through their rebellion and their violations, they become not only more beastly, but they become more devilish. Part beast, part devil. See how that works? So therefore, now you see why salvation is a big thing. A big thing, and that's what we all need. We need to be saved from this legacy of the Garden of Eden. See, we need to be saved from our own traumas, our own conditioning and our own trauma. See, we not only are we born of the lineage of Adam and Eve, but then, lo and behold, we are traumatized, especially as kids, by various things, which then cause us to develop fetishes and phobias and upsets and traumatic memories and flashbacks and also which lead us to go out and seek more of the very trauma in which to immerse ourselves, see, for what little pleasure we can and relief we can get from it. Now the other aspect of all of this, there's another aspect, see, as if I hadn't already given you plenty. But you can see, you know, you can see that what I'm saying is true. In your own life, you've seen these type of things happen. But the other aspect is the hypnosis. See, in the trauma, see, in the Garden of Eden, Adam's consciousness changed. He changed from being aware and being aware in God's light, see, and subject to God's guidance by way of intuition, subject within to a wordless guidance from God. See, he was very close. It was like a bond. It was like a bond between him and God. And so he intuitively knew how to live and how to be. And he would grow through a discovery process, discovering things and realizing things that had been very beautiful. But instead, his consciousness changed, and he became fixated to things that were in the scene of the trauma. See, fixated to what happened in the trauma, fixated to the woman, to the food, and she fixated to the man and the food. See, and fixated to awareness of their own sudden sexuality that sprung up when when their consciousness changed and they became animal. See, and also a hypnotic state in that they were no longer aware, see, as they had been, but were now subject to those things to which they had fallen. See, the elements in the scene, see, and also the spoken word, and subject, if you will, to the devil himself and the devil's suggestion. So now look at people. Look at how suggestible they are. See, you could have two people. One of them is a honest kind of person who just speaks honestly, and another one is a very clever liar. And people find the clever liar more believable. See, and we follow more suggestions, all kinds of suggestions that people make, all kinds of wrong suggestions. We tend to follow them. Not to mention superstitions and everything else. We follow, so we're subject to error, we're subject to suggestions, we're subject to devilish people that are very clever and seductive. See, we're subject to those. And in our violations, in every one of our violations, in every one of our falls, our consciousness is lowered. See? So you can see that even if we are violated, see, I'll just give you a simple example. And again, you're going to have to look into your own life and see all these different situations. But even in your own life, you know, if somebody comes up behind you and they go, and they make a loud noise and go, boo! See, in that moment, that little shock, see, it changes your consciousness. For a moment, you become more malleable, more suggestible, see? And that's why, you know, governments know that when there's a war, when there's a big war threatened or coming, people become more manageable, more malleable, more tractable. See, they look to someone to lead them. See, they go into a collective hypnotic state. And all it takes is a shock, any kind of a shock. See, that's trauma. Again, in the shock. Instead of the shocking truth, it's the shocking lie. Shocking people, brazen people, pushy people. See, seductive, crude, rude, see, people are very shocking, and their very shocking presence dulls our consciousness and causes us to go into a little bit of a trance in their state, in their presence. But see, if in our violation we lose consciousness, then that's why another reason why people will seek violation. They will seek circumstances like the one in which they were violated. They'll seek a woman that's, you know, that yells and screams like their mom, or a man will look for a woman who cooks like wife, or a woman will look for a man who's vile like her father, see, or, you know, that sort of thing. Or people go out looking for sexual violation or drug violation, because in the violation, our consciousness is lowered. And so when our consciousness is lowered, we're less aware of conscience, less aware of wrong, less aware of uneasiness. See, if you become very aware, when you're very aware, you become aware that of being a bit anxious and not quite knowing where to go, and you become aware of your own wrongs, your own little hatreds of people and resentments of people and so on and so forth. You become aware of that. And if we're unwilling to face that, then we want to escape from awareness. So we want to basically like hiding in bed and pulling the covers over your head. See, we don't want to, we can't face, truth is too threatening. Reality is threatening. See, we feel more comfortable in our hypnotic trance. And so when things are too calm, when everything's okay, then people look for something to mess everything up a little bit so they can go into a hypnotic trance. And then in their hypnotic trance, see, that's why they look for violation. They feel comfortable. That's what they're used to. The kind of man, the kind of woman, the kind of act, the kind of presence, the kind of wrong, the kind of substances, whatever, that were present in the violation scene. See, when they enter that scene, they go into a trance, their consciousness is lowered, and for a spell, they're immersed in that, see, and then they get the reward, see, the wrong reward is that they're temporarily not aware of them, of their own guilt and their own wrong, their own anxiety, and for a moment, for a little moment, they feel comfortable, see, and in that comfort, see, they derive pleasure from it, and so they lust for the one who takes them away from awareness. See how that works? All right. Well, let's take a little break at this point. We're talking about trauma, and we're talking about violation. Violation is a trauma. And when we were little children, we were violated by cruelty, confusion, meanness, tease, and all sorts of pressures. See, ambition pressure is a violation. The pressure to be ambitious. It's okay to be industrious. Children are naturally industrious. Children are naturally playful. They want to discover. They love learning. But it's twisted and distorted when they're pressured. Pressured to be ambitious, to get to rise to the top, to make the acquisition of knowledge important instead of just the sheer joy of discovery. See what I mean? And peer group pressure is a violation. See, school pressure, peer group pressure. Now, I have to say that these pressures are everywhere, and they become pressure when we respond to them, when we resent them, especially when we resent the pressure. See, when we resent the pressure, then it gets to us, and it penetrates. See, it's the resentment that causes it to penetrate. If we could keep it on the outside, see, the pressures are all there. Maybe you can remember when you were a little tiny child. When you were a little tiny child, there were pressures everywhere, but you didn't notice them. You were happy, and you lived in your own little happy world. But at some point, they started to get to you. People pulled on your heartstrings and emotionalized you. Other people said mean things to you, or they were cruel, or they were impatient. See, or you saw your parents. You saw them fighting angrily, hatefully. Maybe your father left. You saw things that are not good, not right, especially when we see our parents do things that aren't right. See, it causes us to resent them. And when we resent them, then that resentment causes the world to come rushing in. And then we become reshaped and remolded in the image of that world to which we fell. See, it's a fall. We were bested. When you resent, when the pressures get to you and you resent them, hate them, then you were bested. See, you were bested by those pressures. You were overcome by those pressures. And then you become loyal to those pressures. They're your new master. The world becomes your new master, to which you obey songs and allegiance because it overcame you. See? Now we're supposed to be obedient to to what we know in our heart is right, to our intuition, to principle. See, ultimately to God. See, to God by whom, who we have a lifeline connection to by way of our intuition. So a little child doesn't have to be directly obedient to God, but the little child, if the little child loves what he knows in his heart and doesn't it, then he remains close to it. See, that's the other thing. We doubt it. We're tempted to doubt, and that's also a violation. People on the outside assail you with all manner of confusion, all manner of lies and half-truths and distortions. They try to make you wrong, see? And if they're wrong and they see the little child looking at them with innocent eyes, they try to make the little child think he's wrong for seeing them as wrong, see? Or the little child sees what's really true and accidentally says the truth and gets slapped down for being honest. Another little child is happy in class and carefree and the teacher doesn't like it. The teacher hates that carefree. Like there were teachers that hated Einstein. They hated him. There was one teacher in particular that hated him and said he was always sitting in the back of the room with a smirk on his face. See? So Einstein was innocent and carefree and happy and thumbed his nose at authority, and so they hated him. See? But they tried to get to him. See, one teacher hated him and he couldn't get a job, and a lot of bad things happened, but he survived them. See, he kept his innocence, probably by not hating them. That's how he kept his innocence. He didn't hate them. And so that's what you must do too. But you have hated, you have resented. That's the word, resent. You have resented, the pressures got to you, the pressures rushed in and changed you. But once they changed you, then your loyalty was then to them. Whether you liked, you didn't want to. See, you didn't want to go along with the peer group when they were rotten. You wanted to remain innocent and sweet, and you didn't want to be cruel, and you didn't want to have sex, and you didn't want to smoke cigarettes and marijuana and do all the rotten things and tease and be cruel, and the gangs and all the rotten things that were going on. You didn't want to, and you didn't want to hate your parents. You wanted to love your parents. You wanted to respect your parents. See, but there was something in them, something in your mom hated your dad, something in your mom that was confusing. Something in her that wanted to be right all the time. And there was something in your dad that was weak, that wasn't there for you. Something was missing, so you hated them, see? Resented them, let's put it that way, resented them. But then, of course, you felt guilty. So a lot of us, we feel very guilty. We think that's love. See, we think the feelings that we have and wanting to be nice to people and everything, we think it's love, but it's out of guilt for resenting them. Especially our parents who failed us. So that's how the violation rushed in, but then the world became your master. And the cruelty that was in them, the confusion that was in them, see, the wrong spirit that was in them, that got in them through when they resented their parents, going back generation after generation. Then that wrong spirit became your master, the peer group, see, the bureaucracy, the educational establishment, the whatever it was. The gangs, the pop culture, see? That was your master, and maybe you hated it. See, maybe you went along, maybe you went along and maybe even kind of liked some aspects of it, you liked it, but it wasn't really your friend, see? It wasn't really your friend, which you discovered later. The peer group and the pop culture and so on were not really your friend, but maybe you hated them, or you resisted them initially, but then your resentment made you guilty, so you doubted yourself, then you buckled under. Then it changed you, so you became like them. So you became molded in their image because you fell to them. And then you owed your allegiance to them. Now you became an enemy of God, so to speak. See, you became an enemy of conscience, an enemy of what you knew was right in your heart. So for years you went around smoking marijuana and clinging to the group and getting their support. See, and you escaped from conscience. You escaped from God. So you became like the prodigal son. Remember the prodigal son who took his inheritance and went off and wasted it all, ruined his you know, wasted his life. Then he thought to himself, you know, even the servants in my father's house live better than I do. And so he decided to go back, and he was sorry. But the closer he got to his father's house, that's just like you, the closer you get to conscience. See, you want to run. Something, it makes you nervous, it makes you anxious. You want to run, you want to reach for a drink, reach for something to eat. Reach for your iPhone to text, or reach for the computer, reach for a magazine. See, reach for some music. You want to reach for something to escape from conscience. See, to escape from intuition, to escape from God. But the closer he got to his father's house, it's just like you when you think, well, maybe I could meditate, as Roland teaches. He has a nice meditation to help me to get back in touch with my intuition so I can become a friend of conscience again, a friend of God, and start living my own life, start being remolded from within by loving my intuition and doing what's right in my heart, become a friend of God instead of a friend of the world, and start becoming myself who I was meant to be. But you think of sitting still, but something says to you, no, you don't need to do that. You don't need, it's not time yet. Something distracts you. Something interferes. See, the phone rings or something happens, and something almost mysteriously. See, what does it say in the Bible? It says we wrestle not with flesh and bones, but with principalities and powers and, you know, in high places. So there's some, see, just as there's good, just as God exists and good exists and this light of intuition exists. See, the world of good exists, heaven exists. There's also hell, there's also evil. There's also wrong. See, and evil talks to you in your mind. It's always there, consoling you. See, consoling you in your, you know, it's like if you did something to your father, then you had enmity between you and your father, and then for some rotten kids would console you. They say, hey, have a marijuana, don't worry about your old man, he doesn't know anything, forget your old man. See what I mean? They're always there consoling you, comforting you, and excusing, see, misleading you, leading you astray, and then comforting you. But then after it's the spirit of evil operating through other people and in your mind, after it's corrupted you, got you to do all kinds of wrong things and make a lot of mistakes, then it torments you, see. Then it says you're no good, you're worthless, you know, do away with yourself, see? So not only do we have the violation of people, confused people, they themselves under the wrong influence, see? What did Christ say? He said, Father, forgive them, they know not what they do. Most people have no idea what they're doing, they don't know, see? They don't, sometimes, some people are wicked, they know what they're doing. Most people aren't, they're confused, they're misled. They don't even realize what they're doing. They don't realize the wrong they're committing, the errors that they're making. So the point is, the prodigal son, the closer he got to his father's house as he made the trip back home, finally got to the door. He could hardly even knock on the door. He was so ashamed and so afraid. And finally he knocked on the door and his father was there. He says, Father, I wasted all the money and I lived improperly and I didn't do what was right. And I'm sorry, Father. I don't even deserve to be your son. And the father said, welcome back, my son. I knew you were messing up. I knew you were making mistakes and living wrongly. I knew. I've just been waiting for you to come back and be sorry and admit you're wrong. Now you have. Welcome back. Welcome. Let's have a feast. Let's cook a big meal and have a feast because I had lost a son. And now my son is back. I've regained my son. See how sweet? All right. Well, that's what you need to do. You need to get back in touch with your conscience. Drag yourself into a room and sit still with the meditation and learn to meditate properly and become a friend of your conscience. Get back in touch with your intuition again. But I want to put a little polishing touch on what I was saying earlier about lust, about violation, about lust. See, when we fall from the spiritual, we fall into the animal. See, and beyond the animal is the evil. See, evil is on one side is God, and he made creation, but then on the other side of creation is evil. And once you pull you into wrong things, pull you down into your mind and into the imagination and into sensuality, see, pull you down, And so there it is. So you become more sensuous, more sensual, more animal. See? So when you fall from true love, which would have kept you safe and whole, and is that when you fall away, when you fall to the world who bests you and overcomes you, and you become worldly, then you need the world for its approval. You have lowly emotions, lowly animal emotions arise. Lusts and hates, see? So you begin to lust the very things that are bad for you, the very people who were cruel to you, see? The very people with whom you sinned, now you lust after them. Because by consorting with them and immersing yourself in them, it takes away the pain, see? And takes you away for a little while from conscience, from realization of your own wrong. See what I mean? So you lust after them. So you lust them, but then as you immerse yourself in them and do things with them and party with them and whatever else you do with them, then you realize you're becoming wronger. See? So you hate them. But then the hate is another fall. And in the fall, then you lust for more comfort. You ended up being comforted by the very thing that you hate. See? All right. You got the idea? Well, what's the old expression, like the hair of the dog to bit you? You know, some people, they go out and they get all drunk, and the next day they have a terrible hangover. So what do? They have a little bit of alcohol to help take away the hangover. You see what I mean? So the very people that we hated, then we lust their approval. We want, crave their approval. We crave their love because we can't, until we're willing to be sorry, until we come back and admit we're wrong, like the prodigal son. See, until we become still before our conscience and admit we're wrong, then all we can do is look for the comfort of the world to which we lust with animal emotions. All right. Well, I think I'll make an end to the lecture at this point. I've given you an awful lot to think about and to see. Listen to this again and again. Every time you'll see more and more. Get the meditation. Give it a try. Become a friend of God. Okay? And cease having conflict with God. See, that's the thing. When we become wrong and we don't want to admit we're wrong, then we have to seek the love of the world, but then we have conflict with God. What does it say in the Bible? Love of the world makes for enmity with God. So you understand now? Okay. But do you also understand that you can't help yourself now? You are a slave of sin. Now do you see that you're a slave? It's because you're made of the world. You've been penetrated by the world and violated by the world. And now that's the only kind of love you can get, except you know there's something else. Deep down in your heart, you know that there is something else. But the evil thing speaks to you and says, oh, God hates you, you know, you're not good enough. God doesn't exist, or if he does exist, you know, you've committed the unforgivable sin, blah, 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 blah. See, it'll try anything it can to keep you from becoming still. See, coming back to your intuition again. See? And then staying close to it from now on. Staying close to your intuition. Sure, your intuition will bring you a little bit of pain. It's called conscience when you realize that you hated your dad or resented your mom. You know, things like that. You'll see those. It'll bring a little tear to your eye. It'll make you sad, but it'll be a sad glad. You'll be sad about what you see about yourself in the light of truth, but you'll be glad. You'll be glad the light is there showing you. See? Showing you for the purpose that you can be better. See? And then God forgives you. You'll see. Not because I say so, because it is so. You'll see for yourself. That after you had your tear and borne the pain of seeing your own wrong, been sorry, and not tried to seek any remedy, not looked for comfort from the world. See? Just quietly realizing in your own heart. Meanwhile, going about your business out in the world. Okay, going to work and studying, whatever else you do, but in your heart you knew you made some mistakes and you bear a little pain for it. Then all of a sudden one day you wake up and it's all gone. No more pain. See, it's like it was like distant memory, like it never even happened. These things of the past. Now you're free. Now you're free. Free to go forth and live properly from now on. My name is Roland. Thanks for listening.